Now on Facebook Live and RadioBuzz.com, this is No Limit People with Dr. Will Horton.
Hi. Do you dream of a better life? That better life might be a better body, maybe better relationships, maybe it's make more money, maybe it's start a new relationship, it could be anything. And you dream of that life, but you can't quite get there. I want you to know it's not your fault, because you don't know what you don't know. And we all know deep down inside that there's certain people that want to withhold information that really helps us break free. Hi, I'm Dr. Will Horton, and this is No Limit People, NLP for the real world, where we do a show every week based on helping you break free of the limits that hold you back from being who and what you really want to be. So today, my guest got sick yesterday, so we'll be doing that one probably next week. It's a wonderful personal coach, NLP trainer and practitioner, motivational speaker from Lebanon. That should be fun. And in the next few weeks, I have someone coming from Boston area. A magician's going to be on. We're going to talk about the art of distraction and how we use that in the media, or how the media uses distraction. So we got some good courses or shows being lined up. Today, I want to talk a little bit about some fun stuff that can really help us. So today, what I'd like to talk about is self-judgment, right? And how to take small habits and turn it into large success. And I call that the 1% rule. And we're going to be going over some other things much like that. But we're going to start with self-judgment. Why do we self-judge ourselves? Because self-judgment equals sabotage. Now, there are different types of self-judgment. Number one is we set unrealistic expectations for ourselves. We do that. Or we set unrealistic expectations for success. And to do this, one of the things we do is we judge ourselves by impossible standards. Let's use an example. If you've just started playing basketball, let's say, right, and you've never really played basketball, and you just started playing basketball, and you're going to judge yourself by a Michael Jordan, that's my generation, or LeBron James currently, you're setting yourself up for failure. And I bring this up because I was working with a person who was trying to be a better public speaker. One of the things I've been known for is helping people be a better platform speaker, public speaker, just, you know, how to get your message out. And we're working, and he was getting much better. But then he comes in, he goes, "I'm ready to quit." And I go, "Why?" He goes, "You know, I was watching this Tony Robbins, when he was doing a speech, and I should just give up now." And I'm like, "Sir, you know, you just started public speaking literally within the last 6 months. And you're doing really well. You're getting good feedback. But you're going to judge yourself by a guy that's all he's done since he was 17 years old. And he spent basically now 40 years of his life. That's all he does is speak in public. So you're setting yourself up for failure by comparing yourself to a guy that, you know, for many years he took acting, singing, dance. All he did was speak, you know, and coach and train. But mainly he worked on his speaking. Now, I say that and we go, yeah, that doesn't make sense. But we all do it. Right. And one of the reasons we do this is we focus on the end goal, not where we are right now. And that's what we do. You know, I suck as a speaker compared to Tony Robbins. Right. Where you go, "Hey, I've come a long way since when I started." But we're comparing ourselves to the end result. Now, we were talking before we got started, the illustrious producer, Mr. Chris, and I was talking about, you know, my other profession is acting. You know, I've been an actor off and on my whole life. In fact, it was a career that my addiction took away, which led me into getting into self-help, becoming an alcohol and drug counselor, then a psychologist, NLP hypnosis, and it's what I do now. But I've still always acted. But for most of my life, I've done stage acting, and that's an interesting craft. It's different. You're in front of an audience, and you could tell I got big movements. And a lot of this comes from my, you know, 30 years on the stage. And just in the last few years, I started working a lot in film. Now, film is totally different. I mean, we might say acting is acting, but it's so much different when you get on in front of a camera. And so if I judge myself by people that have been acting on film for decades, I'm setting myself up for failure. The way to beat this, and here's the first success hack, brain hack, life hack number one, is when you have a model, whether it's if it's speaking Tony Robbins, whether if it's acting, you know, a Robert De Niro, if it's sports, maybe it's a, you know, a Michael Jordan or LeBron James. If that's your goal, rather than focus on that, your end goal to be that good, focus on, I wonder how they were when they were first getting started. And the reason I bring this up, again, because I was coaching that guy on how to be a better public speaker, and I had several people in a public speaking class, I thought, I'm going to do some research. And so I put together a course on the course was entitled What Makes Tony Robbins Tony Robbins. And one of the things I did through the illustrious internet that we're on now is I went back, and what happened was I found videos of him when he was very young and first starting out. And that was very helpful for the people first starting. I said, look at where he was, you know, when he was 22. Don't look at when he was 42 or 52, right? Look at him when he was first getting started, right? So rather than just focus on the end goal, focus on where you are now and wonder how this person was when they first got started. You know, to use a sports analogy, you know, when you watch a truly great football player, pick one, I don't care, you know, Joe Montana, Tom Brady, great. You're watching them when they're in their prime, when they're really cooking, great. But if you're first starting out, if you go back and get tape of when they were starting, that's what you want to begin to compare to, right? And to do this, you have to realize most of us in this country, we confuse being driven with being dissatisfied. We think that we have to be dissatisfied to be driven, right? When actually you can be very satisfied where you are, but want to get better. That's what the elite performers do. You know, when you look at, again, let's use acting. Why do people like, you know, Robert De Niro, Hoffman, Meryl Streep, Bradley Cooper, you know, some of these very accomplished actors, they have acting coaches. They take acting classes. We would say they're good. They're satisfied with where they are. They're happy, but they know they're driven to be better. It's not about being dissatisfied because you can't go back and redo a performance, but it's about being driven to be better. And the best way to look at this is to think about a seed. You know, I'm not a gardener, but it's a good metaphor. If you were going to plant a seed, pick a flower, you know, most people would use a rose. If you planted a rose bush, right, the moment you planted the seed, are you going to stand there and look down at the plant and scream and go, you little wimp, you got no roots. What is wrong with you? Why aren't you breaking free? And come back in 2 days. Where's my damn flower? Where's my damn flower? I don't think we're going to do that, but we do it to ourselves. We just start a task and then we think we should be way out here. You know, our illustrious, I always use real life examples. Our illustrious producer, Mr. Chris, is getting in, you know, green screens, new studio and this and that. If he's going to compare himself to like someone that's been doing it for a long time, you're instantly going to sabotage yourself that's when you give up. Right. And again, it's like that poor little plant. You don't get mad at the plant. You know, it's like a baby. You don't scream at it and go, why aren't you walking? You're 2 months old. But we do that. So what we want to do is be like that seed. Well, you know what's interesting? And my wife has done this, and we had to do it. We had a bougainvillea, which I hate, but it's a pretty tree. She had to trim it back. And my friends at garden tell you that one of the hard things is when they're trimming back a beautiful bush, you are actually trimming away things that are good, but you want to make it better. So sometimes you got to trim away things that are pretty or the things that seem okay, but it doesn't really help what you want that thing to be. Like we had the hurricane took it out, but we had one right by the front door and we constantly had to trim it. And my wife felt so bad because the flowers were so beautiful on part and it seemed like all the pretty flowers would grow on the one part we would have to trim or would go over the sidewalk. And because it has thorns, wasn't very useful. So think about that. Sometimes we have to trim away things that seem good, but are they good in the long run? Again, if you want to be a very good, whatever it is, you may need to cut out other things in your life or trim it back like the rose bush, the bougainvillea bush, or something else if you want to be really good. And there's a really good story that kind of goes like this. It comes from theater because that's one of my worlds, theater, self-help, military, a few martial arts. That's about it. But the story is of there's a great choreographer. Her name was Agnes DeMille. She choreographed lots of musicals back in the 30s and 40s, all the way up to, I forget when she finally quit. But at one point in her life, she's ready to quit. I think it was in the 50s or so. And the reason, she was talking to another great choreographer named Martha Graham, and she said, "I'm ready to quit." And of course, the other person said, "Why?" It was done in letters, but she had no judge what talent was, is what she said. She said, "I did all this wonderful work in these nice musicals in the 1930s. And they were okay, and people liked them, but there wasn't like, ugh." And then she choreographed this play, this musical called Oklahoma, the play that changed Broadway. You know, Rodgers and Hammerstein's Oklahoma was the longest running play for a long time, literally changed Broadway, you know? And she was known for that. She won accolades. You know, there's there's a dance in a tornado. But she goes, it's not that good. So I have no judge on what's good. Maybe I should quit. Well, Martha Graham, who wonderful choreographer in her own right, said, "You have a unique talent, ability, and skills. No one can do what you are put here to do. And you're bringing these talents to the world. Your job is to bring the talents to the world and then let the world decide, or let history work it out. Let you just do the work, get it out there, and then let the world or let history decide if it's applicable or not." Yeah. We see this a lot, especially in the arts. You know, again, Mr. Chris, our producer, is a musician. A lot of times you'll hear these musicians say, you know, they'll be making records or songs for decades, and then they have one that explodes and becomes a big hit, and they get kind of depressed because they go, "It wasn't my best work, but the audience loved it," right? So, but it can do other things for you, obviously. So one of the things that happens is, you know, much like Agnes DeMille, you just got to do the work and get it out. And that's about self-judgment, right? Because she was judging herself, not by the results. Hell, that thing won all the Tony Awards, went to when they did the movie, she did that. It was great. And yet we do that. Again, if you like this radio show / Facebook Live, please click like, make a comment, share it as many times as you can, because that's how we grow this. And I try to get this information out. So this is like on self-sabotage, self-judgment. And now I want to talk about something that kind of goes with it. And one of the things that can happen that can cause us to do self-judgment is when we use goals and we turn them into roadblocks. It sounds weird when I say it, because we all say we want a goal. We want to have a goal. We want to have a goal. Great. Goals are great. But what about when you confuse the goal with what you really want the goal to do? Best example of that is, there was a study done at Princeton University. And at Princeton University, they took the theology department, and they had all these people studying theology who basically wanted to become ministers. And they brought them in and said, "Okay, your job, your assignment, is you're going to preach or do a lecture, if you want to call it a sermon, a lecture, preach, whatever term you want to use, on the Good Samaritan, you know, the parable of the Good Samaritan from the Bible. And, you know, about helping someone in need, stopping, you know, all the other people walk by, you know, the Good Samaritan stopped and helped the person in need. And of course he got, you know, Jesus's love. And I don't claim to be a Bible scholar, but you know what I'm talking about. Great. So then they helped them, coach them up a little bit on how to do a wonderful presentation, sermon, whatever it was, on this. And then as they were getting ready to leave, they said, "Oh, by the way, we're running late. We got to start in 5 minutes, and it's about an 8 or 10 minute walk. So you're really going to have to haul to get there so you can do this and work on your sermon to help bring people to, you know, basically you want to save souls." Great, right? So they left, and they were running to get to where they want to go. Now, what the study really entailed is, this was from the psych department, they hired actors. And on the way, the theologian, the person that was going to do the sermon or the seminar on the Good Samaritan, would literally encounter an actor that's laying there wounded. You know, it looked like they fell down, blood, and they're crying, asking for help, reaching up. Now, what's interesting, every single person walked right by the person in need, even though they were on their way to teach a seminar or a sermon on the Good Samaritan. Fascinating. A few actually stepped over the person to get into the building where they had to teach. So they're in such a hurry to get to the goal, which was, you know, to preach the sermon or to do the seminar, that they lost the whole message of it, which was to stop and help the person in need. Now, think about the power of that. Think about how we do that sometimes. We lose track of what this goal is for. You know, to use another analogy, how many times you see someone start a business to get, and they're trying to make money so their family can be secure. They become a multi-millionaire, maybe a billionaire, and they get so wrapped up in building the business, they don't know their kids. They don't know their wife. They don't know anything, right? They get to the goal and then wake up and go, what was that? Or, you know what I mean? I mean, we all do that, right? Goals are good for clarity, but with that, we have to have, you know, some focus within the goals. What's the goal intending? What's the why behind the goal? You know, and growth is the key. Growth is the key. And so, you know, if you think about the power of that, you want to, and then of course, all these, you know, if you did that, if you put the goal above what the goal means, that really leads to self-incrimination, self-judgment, self-sabotage, because you're setting yourself up for failure because you lose the end result. You know, we see this all the time. And you know, I'm usually not political anymore. It usually ends up biting me. But the only thing I will say with this is a little bit, maybe right now what we see in the political arena is people have the goal, whatever that goal might be, you know, make America secure, make America great, all this. And they're stepping over the what it was intended to get to that goal, right? It's just a different way of looking at it. And so what we want to do is, the one way to do this, here's a life hack number two. Today we're going to have a couple of life hacks. Life hack number two is, the way to do this is think of the end goal as what we call a stretch goal. It's going to stretch you, you know, to really build your business to this level, to take your career to this level, right? And then with that, you want to have within it two things. Number one is the why. Why am I working toward this goal? And keep that as important as the end goal, right? Okay, if I build a million dollar business, why? Is it just to have $1 million, or is it for something else? Keep that in mind. And then within that, you break it into what we call SMART goals. I think we did one class, we talked about SMART goals. There's papers written on it. It comes from NLP back in the 70s and early 80s. And that stands for specific, measurable, attainable, realistic, and testable, right? So as you're going toward this goal, especially if it's a big goal, you know, you break it down into small SMART goals. You know, what's the specific thing? Well, if I want to get to this level, I need to do this. You know, if you want to be a good basketball player, first I got to really learn how to play basketball, you know, get better at this. Is it measurable? You know, where I hit half my shots, that's measurable. Is it attainable? Can I do that? Well, if I put in the time, yes. So is it realistic within parameters? Yes. You know, is it testable? Yeah, you see the results or you don't. So just think about the power of that, you know, and we can have some fun with this because it's so cool when we get into this. And now really, I want to go over one more thing, and this has a different life hack, and it's called the 1% rule. Why small shifts equals huge results. You know, why we set ourselves up for failure, people bite off more than they can chew. They're trying to start a new habit. Maybe in the next week or two, we'll do another whole session just on habits. Excuse me. But so they want to get better at something. Let's say basketball. We'll just use that analogy. And so a 1% rule would be, okay, every day I'm going to spend 1 minute and shoot, you know, 10 shots. Very small. But then most of us go, that's bullshit. I'm going to spend 30 minutes or an hour. Well, you're setting off a big chunk that you may never get to. If you make small changes, it grows exponentially. And the best story of this, there's two examples. One is I live here in beautiful Florida. Chris is out in California. If I got on an airplane and I'm flying to where he's at and the plane got off by 1% or 1 degree and we're heading that way, I would miss where he's at in California by hundreds, if not thousands of miles, right? Because that 1%, as you grow, it grows exponentially. And that's true when you're making small incremental shifts. And small incremental shifts are easier to do. You know, if your goal is to do 10 sit-ups today, you're much more likely to do 10 sit-ups. If you say, nope, every day I'm going to do 1,000 sit-ups, I would bet you $100 you don't do it for very long, right? But you could do 10, you know? You could do the guy that wrote the thing, Small Habit or Tiny Habits, every time he would go to the bathroom, every time he'd take a leak after he washed his hands, he would do 10 push-ups. He had to work up to where he could do 10 push-ups, right? And took him a while, but he systematically did it. And now he could wrap off like 30 or 40 at a crack with no sweat, right? But he still only does 10. Sometimes he might do more if he feels up to it, but it's a small incremental change. And again, much like that airplane, if you 1% can mean everything. And the other story that goes with this, again, if you like this, please click like, write a comment, and share it with people. And, you know, get in touch with us if you have other questions. If you want to get on my email list, that would be lovely. We could do some things. And a few years ago, well, several years ago now, British cycling, you know, the people, you know, the bicyclists, it's a big sport all over the world. It's huge in Europe compared to here. Well, the British cycling team had not done well for decades. And so they brought in a new coach and, you know, they interviewed all these coaches and they asked this one guy, what would he do? He goes, well, I would implement small, tiny changes in multiple areas. It's the 1% rule. And it may or may not seem like it has much to do with cycling, but these 1% things exponentially will grow and grow and grow. It's like the thing about compounding interest. And so they brought him in and he did do that. He did things. Some of it didn't seem to make sense. You know, they did studies on which massage oils help the athletes recover quicker. They did other things. Oh, which pillows help the athletes sleep better when they were on the road? You know, what were the best ways so people could rest when they were traveling? These kind of things, small little things that they began to implement. And then they did some for the cycling. They, you know, bought 1% lighter bikes, thinner tires, all those other kind of things that go with it. Well, what happened was, and when he was hired, he goes, if we do this, I would project that we would win the Tour de France, the biggest cycling thing in the world, within 5 years. He was totally wrong. They won it in 3. They repeated, and I think they've won it again since. But in the 2012 Olympics, they won over 60% of all the gold medals. The team that the Olympics before did not do very well, and it had to do with all these small changes that happens, you know, because if you get 1% better every day, it ripples through time. It ripples through time. And so this is so powerful because it begins to show you the power of making small attainable. Remember a few minutes ago, I talked about make your goals small and attainable. You know, doing the 10 sit-ups or you know, 5 push-ups, that's attainable. That's realistic. If you haven't done it, you can do that, right? And then if you did that every day, where would you be in a month, 6 months, or a year? What would your skill set be? You know, if Mr. Chris set aside 10 minutes a day to challenge himself in his music, you know, to play classical, you're a guitar player, right?
I play bass, actually.
Yeah. But if you challenge yourself, but only for 5 or 10 minutes a day, and you did that 5 days out of the 7, where would you be in a month?
Oh, it would be exponential. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. And yet we don't do that. We think, no, I'm going to spend hours doing this. I doubt that. You know, it's because our lives are busy. You know, this 1% rule. And you break that off into small incremental chunks. As we wrap it up, I'm going to tell a story. I call it the Seinfeld strategy. When Seinfeld's TV show was first taking off, he was a good businessman. he still did road shows for the first, I think, 2 years, if not three. Even though his show was becoming a huge hit, he was terrified it was going to flop. So he still wanted to do, when they weren't filming, he would be on the road doing comedy. Well, one day he's at a club and there's a young comic who's warming up for him. And then afterwards he goes, you know, Mr. Seinfeld, what would you tell me? I want to be a better comic. He goes, you got to write every day. You got to write jokes every day. And it sounds thing. And the guy goes, well, yeah. He goes, no, you got to do this every day. And he goes, just 10 minutes. Of course, everybody goes, well, that would be easy. He goes, no, 10 minutes every day. And so the guy asked him, well, how would you do this? He goes, you get a big calendar. You know, you get those big calendars that's got 365 days or at least 6 months out, right? And he goes, every day that you write for 10 minutes, you put an X. He goes, now I'm going to stress to you, it doesn't matter if the jokes are bullshit, right? It doesn't matter if you're never going to use that joke in your act. In fact, maybe 1 out of 100 jokes you will even test, and then 1 out of 10 of those you might add. He goes, but your job is to write every day for 10 minutes. Like I said, okay. He goes, and what's going to happen, though, is you're going to ebb and flow. You're going to first start off, you'll be on fire, then you'll skip. And then you'll remember to do it, and you'll do a few, and then you'll skip. He goes, but eventually, you're going to get into a pattern. And now your only goal is to never miss more than a day or two at a time. So when you get those X's up, you get 2 or 3 in a row. Now your only goal is to get it done tomorrow. Don't worry about whether much like our Martha Stewart, not Martha Stewart, Agnes DeMille, Martha Graham story. Don't worry whether this is going to be good or not, whether this joke is going to be good or not. You know, a friend of mine writes books and he's written 40 something books so far. And he's about my age. He's a very prolific writer. 5 days a week, he writes 1,000 words a day. And when I was talking to him and we wrote a book together, he said, generally, unless he's really focused, maybe 2 of the day's work he can actually turn into articles or put into his book. But every day he writes 1,000 words, which, by the way, is 5 type pages or a good article in a magazine. And that's how he got me to start writing and doing some things. And so, you know, when you think about that, like the Seinfeld strategy, then your goal is to not miss. To not miss over and to be, again, don't set yourself up for total sabotage. There's going to be times maybe you're running late. You got, you know, especially a comic, you know, you got a flight, you can't, whatever. But your goal is to not miss over a day or two. If you do that, you'll become an elite comic. And I think the person he told this story to is a very successful working comedian to this day. So that's the third little life hack I gave today. It's called the Seinfeld strategy. Again, if you do it in small increments, pick small goals that you can add. Next time or within a few, I'm going to spend a whole thing on how to make these small habits lock in much easier than people know. Again, if you like this, click like and share. Tell it to everybody. If you don't like it, don't tell anybody. But have some fun with it. Our goal is to get this information out there and to break through those limits so you can be a happy, prosperous, joyful person that you are intended to be. And I'll close with, you know, one of the things I took from that Agnes DeMille, Martha Graham little story is for years, I've heard it a long time ago, is I constantly tell people, you're a unique, special person. No one else has your special talents, abilities, and skills. Of all the billions of people on the planet, you're the only you. Only you can tell your stories. So tell your stories, live your life, let the world judge, but have some fun. Tomorrow's the 4th of July. Have some fun, enjoy it. Thank the people in our history here in the United States that sacrificed so we could enjoy this. I lost many comrades in certain things over that. So thank the people that do that. And I'd like to thank Mr. Chris for another wonderful show. And we'll see you as we trudge the road to happy destiny.
This has been No Limit People with Dr. Will Horton. Join us each week on Tuesdays at 12 p.m. Pacific Standard Time and 3 p.m. Eastern Time right here at Facebook Live and RadioBuzz.com.